Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
And I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we return to the subject of the crimes of the U.S. Empire with a focus on the Middle East this particular occasion. And the crimes of U.S. Empire include not just what the United States does in various Middle Eastern countries with illegal occupations and military actions, but then turning around and lying to the American people about it when they even admit that it happens at all. And with that in mind, we wanted to turn to this subject of Syria and somewhat Iraq as well, because as you probably heard in the corporate media last week, the Biden administration authorized military strikes against something like 85 different targets in Iraq and Syria in so-called retaliation for attacks that caused the deaths of three U.S. soldiers and wounding more than 34 others, purportedly in Jordan, but as we'll find out, it was actually in Syria.
Well, according to the Iraqi militia group that took responsibility, they actually attacked four bases, three in Syria and one in Iraq.
Yeah.
I guess the reason the United States said it was in Jordan is because maybe even some of the most brain-dead Americans would be like, what? We have military bases in Syria?
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
They don't want to admit that, even though they have multiple military bases in Syria. And let me just point out that they said they hit military targets, but according to an Arab newspaper I read, no, they didn't. They also hit food storage areas and other civilian infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah, which is par for the course.
It's a war crime.
As far as that goes,
which
yeah.
Which is par for the course.
Yeah, and on this program, we have done what some people in the anti-war movement have done and some other organizations in calling attention to the fact that the U.S. to this day, for several years now, has occupied about 30% of the territory of Syria without any adherence to international law whatsoever. They weren't invited there by Syria. They were part of a so-called regime change operation, right? And the United States just prefers not to even acknowledge the presence of U.S. troops there.
And they're stealing their oil.
Yeah.
And the only people, you say peace, some of the peace people, I've never seen any peace people, but I have seen Jimmy Dore and Alex Cristoforo talk about how the U.S. is occupying 30% of Syria and stealing their oil and their wheat.
Yeah.
Those are the only people I see talk about it.
Yeah, well, it's certainly not getting the attention it deserves. And as a matter of fact, the U.S. and the corporate media in this country have basically adopted a strategy of just not acknowledging it.
Right.
I went to the State Department website. If you go, they have like country by country reports. And if you click on the country report for Syria, you'll find that they talk about how much they don't like the Assad regime and what their policy toward Assad is and et cetera, and how they've got sanctions.
That's called a blockade. That's called a siege. They'll call it a siege when it's some countries, but other countries, they're like, oh, no, it's sanctions.
Yeah.
The people of Syria are going cold and hungry. They only have electricity 1 hour a day. This is all because of the United States. And there's not a dang word mentioned in the media or in most peace organizations. I just can't believe it. And here's the other thing. This is what you'll hear if you tell someone something horrendous that happened. Oh, they could never keep that secret.
Right, yeah.
They could never cover that up. Oh, really? Did you know the United States is occupying 30% of Syria and stealing their oil and wheat? No.
Yeah.
Well, then they can't keep it secret, can't they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Anyway, the State Department website and their report on Syria doesn't even mention that there's U.S. troops in Syria.
30%.
Yeah.
30% of Syria.
Yeah. And the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, at their website, you have to search. You can find little bits here and there, but it takes some real active searching. For example, I found this statement from last November by Brigadier General Patrick Ryder talking about recent strikes in Syria then. And the Brigadier General said recent airstrikes in Syria directly threaten the safety of U.S. personnel who are working in Syria with local partners to defeat ISIS and maintain custody of more than 10,000 ISIS detainees.
Yeah, they keep them at the Al-Tanf base where they supply them and train them for use as their little proxy terror army.
Yeah, and this is something we've reported on many times, although it's been a while, so we probably need a little refresher. And that, of course, is that the U.S. got involved in Syria beginning, well, it's been involved in many ways for many years, but as far as military operations in roughly 2013, or no, it actually began in 2011, I think.
Well, they sent in terrorist groups starting in 2011 to try to overthrow the government. But it wasn't working because the Syrian government was fighting them off. So then Obama wanted to bomb Syria, get involved more directly.
Right.
And he said, there's a red line. We don't care what Syria does, but if it uses chemical weapons on its own people, then we will bomb. Which came out of the friggin' blue. What? Why would they use chemical weapons on their own people?
Right, right.
You know, in the meantime, these terrorists the U.S. was supplying with chemical weapons were using them on Syrian soldiers. So Assad, the president of Syria, asked the U.N. chemical weapons inspection team to come and check out reports that the terrorists were using chemical weapons on Syrian soldiers. And just as the chemical weapons inspection team arrived in Damascus, by a weird coincidence, Assad used sarin on his own people in a suburb of Damascus, not far from where they landed. Why would he do that? That was crossing the red line. Plus, he had the chemical inspection team right there. Why would he do such a thing?
Right, yeah.
Well, you know, the United States can't explain the actions of leaders in other countries. They just do crazy stuff, right? Well, and then when they showed the victims, which was a high percentage of children and not a lot of adults, where were the adults, right? People in villages back where these terrorists had come from recognized those were their children. They had been kidnapped and they had no idea where their kids went. The terrorists came into town, kidnapped their children. The parents were frantic. They had no idea where they went. All of a sudden, they see their dead children on TV, and the mighty wolves of propaganda is saying that Assad did it to people in this suburb. But the parents are like, no, that's my kid.
Right.
But of course, they could never hide something. They could never keep that secret, could they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. And a nun from Syria who was going from church to church, just like the old Witness for Peace days, right?
Right.
Was going from church to church in America telling people, these kids were kidnapped and then murdered. And then the United States government tried to use their deaths as an excuse to bomb Syria. Well, she got banned.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, democracy and free speech.
Yeah.
But anyhow, Obama said, well, he crossed my red line. Now I get to bomb Syria. And even the UK wouldn't go along with it, right?
Right.
Even the UK Parliament went, that story is hinky as hell. That is not real. We're not doing that. We're not bombing Syria. Ah, so then Obama had to go back to the drawing board, and it was 2014 when ISIS rolled into Syria in their brand new Toyota pickup trucks with matching uniforms and the little factory-built flags of ISIS.
Right, right.
Heavily armed, all kinds of ammo. That's when the United States went, oh, we have to save the people of Syria from ISIS. And then they started bombing, and that's when they invaded, and they've been there ever since.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And fighting ISIS.
Right.
The people they gave the Toyota pickup trucks to, the people they've kept armed and well supplied with ammo.
Yeah. And even though the official reports of the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons upheld the U.S. version of events, saying that basically that the evidence pointed to this being chemicals that were planted by the terrorists when it was under terrorist control, and not by the Assad government bombing their own people or spreading chemicals in their own people.
That was the Duma one. I'm talking about the East Ghouta one.
Right, right, the first one.
Yeah.
Right, right. One of the great journalists who exposed this was Aaron Maté, as we've covered in this program. Well, Aaron Maté has recently written on this latest episode, and you can find this article at Aaron Maté, MATE.net. And it's entitled, Biden Sacrifices American Troops and Mideast Security for U.S.-Israeli Hegemony. The article begins, the Biden administration has vowed to retaliate after a drone strike on a U.S. military base near the Jordan-Syria border killed three U.S. soldiers and wounded more than 34 others, some critically. In a statement, President Biden blamed what he called, quote, radical Iran-backed militant groups operating in Syria and Iraq, unquote, and pledged to hold all those responsible to account.
Now, it was an Iraqi militia that took responsibility, but they are actually part of the Iraqi military. I guess it's just like they're adjacent. So they're not Iranian, they're Iraqi.
Right, yeah. In fact, Aaron points this out, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq, which took credit for the operation, called it a direct response to Israel's genocidal assault in Gaza and the presence of American occupation forces in Iraq and the region. The Iranian Foreign Ministry has denied any involvement. The U.S. claims that its troops were hit on Jordan's side of the border. Jordanian officials dispute that and say that the incident occurred in Syria, where the U.S. maintains an unauthorized and unwelcome military force. Wherever it took place, the Beltway consensus is that Biden must now respond with more aggression in the Middle East, including potential strikes on Iran.
Does that make any sense? No, it doesn't.
No.
It's the consensus, though, so it must be right.
Yeah, that's right. The U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell declared must now impose serious crippling costs on Iran and its allies. Fellow Republican Senator Lindsey Graham called for striking targets of significance inside Iran.
But of course he did.
Yeah. In his view, the only thing the Iranian regime understands is force. For Republican Senator Tom Cotton, the only answer to these attacks must be devastating military retaliation against Iran's terrorist forces, both in Iran and across the Middle East.
Remember, on January 3rd, ISIS, again, these are proxy forces of the United States, took credit for blowing up a memorial service for General Soleimani, and they killed 108 people and wounded hundreds more.
Yeah.
So what do you mean, strike on Iranian soil? They did strike on Iranian soil. As usual, though, they targeted civilians.
Yeah.
Soft targets, they call them. It's much easier to target civilians, just like they do in Ukraine. They'd rather target civilians than the military because the military can fight back.
At this point, there is no indication that Biden has ruled out his Republican critics' top goal. According to New York Times Chief White House Correspondent Peter Baker, the president's advisors were in consensus during a Sunday meeting that the Jordan-Syria attack will require a different level of response. One possibility is that Biden would strike targets inside Iran itself, though that remains unclear. What remains undoubtedly clear is that Biden has put U.S. troops in harm's way and provoked a wider regional escalation due to his devotion not only to Israel's mass murder campaign in Gaza, but broader regional U.S. hegemony. And because the bipartisan U.S. establishment is in lockstep behind that agenda, the only question at hand is what level of aggression to commit. The U.S. government is well aware that it has alternatives to enforcing the Israeli genocide of Gaza and the American military presence across the region. According to the Times, Baker, U.S. officials have said for months that they did not believe Iran wanted a direct war with the United States. Instead, these officials acknowledge Iran has used its proxy forces to keep up the pressure on the United States and Israel as Israel continues to pound Hamas in Gaza.
Well, you know, Hamas actually fought on the side of the U.S. Empire and ISIS in Syria.
Yeah.
So they always put Hamas with these other groups, but they're not. They are totally different. They are more like ISIS than they are Hezbollah.
Right.
They're Sunni radicals. That's what they are.
Yeah.
And the only reason these countries are standing with them is because they all hate Israel, right? Because usually they are not the same. They were literally fighting each other in Syria.
Yeah, that's right. In Yemen, Biden understands that his strikes are failing to deter the Ansar Allah movements, that's the so-called Houthis, blockade of Red Sea ships in protest of the Gaza genocide. Days after the U.S. strikes began, Biden was asked if the bombings are working. Well, when you say working, are they stopping the Houthis? No, Biden said. Are they going to continue? Yes. Well, that made a lot of sense.
We're just killing people for the heck of it. We know it's not going to work. That's just what we do.
Yeah, that's right. Israel's mass murder campaign in Gaza shattered what the Wall Street Journal described in October as an undeclared truce between Tehran and Washington. For more than 6 months before October 7th, the journal noted, Iranian-backed militia groups refrained from launching drones or rockets against American troops in Iraq and Syria. These groups' decisions to strike U.S. forces in response to the Gaza actions follows a well-entrenched pattern of resisting joint U.S.-Israeli aggression, or what the journal describes as efforts to push back against American and Israeli influence in the Middle East. And contrary to U.S. claims that Iran's main regional allies, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Ansar Allah in Yemen, the PMU in Iraq, Hamas Islamic Jihad in Palestine, and the Syrian government are all mere Iranian proxies, these groups have domestic agendas of their own and operate with some measure of autonomy, the journal notes. U.S. intelligence analyst Brian Katz concurs. Iran's allies are no longer simply Iranian proxies, Katz writes. Rather, they have become a collection of ideologically aligned, militarily interdependent, mature political military actors committed to mutual defense. As the Washington Post notes, Iranian allies in the region began targeting U.S. interests in 2018, after then-President Donald Trump withdrew the United States from a landmark nuclear deal with Tehran as part of a hawkish policy of maximum pressure.
Well, that is not true. Number one, Iranian allies, they're talking about these Iraqi and Syrian militias.
Right.
And U.S. interests, they're talking about U.S. military bases. And they've been doing that all along.
Yeah, they were doing
because,
that before.
Yes,
that's true.
Yeah, they were doing that before 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
So first they blame everything on Iran, then they blame it, of course, on Trump.
Yeah, yeah, they're trying to.
That isn't typical.
Yeah, that's right.
What about Putin? Are they going to blame it on Putin?
Yeah. Rather than return to the Iran nuclear deal upon taking office in January 2021, Biden continued the Trump agenda and knowingly endangered U.S. troops in the process.
Why are U.S. troops in Iraq and Syria in the first place?
Yeah, yeah.
Washington Post.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk about that.
Nobody talks about that.
When Biden ordered airstrikes on militia groups in Syria, that's a quote the Washington Post reported in August 2021, that ended up sparking a fresh cycle of reciprocal violence with militiamen firing at a facility housing U.S. troops and American forces responding with artillery fire. Biden's support for Israeli aggression against Syria yielded the same result. When a drone strike hit a U.S. military base located in southern Syria in October 2021, U.S. and Israeli officials acknowledged that it was, well, they called it Iranian retaliation for Israeli airstrikes in Syria, according to the New York Times.
Syrians don't mind having Americans occupying 30% of their land and stealing their oil and their wheat. They don't mind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Iran.
Iran that's doing
is the
that.
Only one that cares.
Yeah. In launching and encouraging attacks on Iranian allies in the region, Biden was pursuing an arrangement that he forged with the Israeli government. In August 2021, then-Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett urged Biden to pursue a death-by-a-thousand-cuts strategy, in which the U.S. and Israel would counter Iran through a combination of many small actions across several fronts, both military and diplomatic, instead of a single dramatic strike, Axios reported.
What they mean is sanctions, starve them, and then bomb civilians.
Yeah.
That's what they mean.
That's basically it.
Yeah, a thousand cuts. Because, again, they don't want to get in a war with someone that can actually fight back.
Yeah.
So instead they kill civilians.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and allies of the Syrian government.
Yeah, and the Syrian military. Actually, they just killed 50 people at a Military Academy Awards ceremony.
That's right.
So the soldiers had graduated from this academy, and all their families were there, right? Their siblings, their parents. So when the United States or Israel, whoever it was that bombed this place, they didn't kill just the graduates. They killed their families, too, including little kids.
Right, yeah.
But that's okay, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay because of the rules-based order. In the rules-based order, the United States can kill whoever they want.
Yeah.
Just other people can't.
Anyway, the goal of this agreement between Biden and Bennett was to put what they called Iran's regional aggression, a euphemism for resisting U.S.-Israeli hegemony, back in the box. Toward that goal, one of Bennett's key requests was that Biden not pull U.S. forces out of Iraq and Syria, which the Israeli delegation felt quite optimistic about.
As if Biden would have first place. Look what happened when Trump tried to withdraw him. You were talking about the gas attacks. The first gas attack was Obama trying to have an excuse to invade.
Right.
But the next two under Trump were Trump trying to get the troops out. Then they gassed these people and said, well, you can't pull the troops out now because then Assad will be able to use chemical weapons on his own people. Even though that makes no sense because the troops are there. Yeah. How are the troops stopping that? They're not. They're facilitating it. At that Al-Tanf military base, and they say they have prisoners, 10,000 ISIS prisoners there. They're protecting them.
Yeah.
Right? Syria can't attack them, the ISIS, because they're there in the U.S. protection.
Yeah.
So they have to just leave them, either that or get nuked. That's a crazy nuke country. We'll nuke them. So that's their choice.
Yeah.
Sophie's choice.
Yeah, yeah. As part of Biden's attunement to Israel's needs, the U.S. has assisted Israel's regular airstrikes on Syria and the Iranian allied forces operating there. While U.S. officials have said little about Israel's bombing missions in Syria, the Wall Street Journal reported in June 2022, behind the scenes, many of Israel's missions for several years have been reviewed in advance for approval by senior officials at U.S. Central Command and at the Pentagon.
Well, of course they have, just like the U.S. is controlling the Ukrainians, but saying it's Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was all Israel's decision. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't think so.
Yeah.
The joint U.S.-Israeli strikes in Syria are complemented by a U.S. military occupation in about 30% of Syrian territory against the explicit wishes of the Damascus government. The U.S. claims that its sole purpose in Syria is to fight ISIS and prevent its resurgence. But as I reported in September 2021, the Pentagon's own documents acknowledge that the U.S. has barely done any fighting against ISIS. A Wall Street Journal report this past July obliquely noted the contradiction between the stated U.S. mission to fight ISIS in Syria and the reality on the ground.
Oh, and remember when Russia stepped in September 2015? Because the United States was absolutely not fighting ISIS, and ISIS was stealing oil and sending it across the border to Turkey. So Russia stepped in and started bombing the trucks that were shipping the oil. And United States, mighty Wurlitzer of propaganda and all the talking heads like Lindsey Graham, oh my God, they're bombing our moderate rebels.
Yeah.
That's what they called them.
Right.
They called these terrorists moderate rebels.
Yeah.
And they squealed so loudly. Also, then in 2016, when Russia and Syria were going to liberate Aleppo, they really squealed then. Oh, no, they're hurting the little kittens of Aleppo. Remember all that propaganda?
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was obvious that the United States was supporting these people because of the way they screamed when Russia came in and actually started fighting them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the ISIS had been tamped down for a while, but now all of a sudden they're striking again, like, you know, in Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, dudes.
The U.S., the journal claimed, is combating the remnants of Islamic State in Syria. Yet despite this stated mission, U.S. troops are operating in the east, far from the northwest enclave where suspected ISIS and al-Qaeda leaders have been operating.
Also in the Al-Tanf.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's talking about Idlib.
Yep. The journal did not explain how the U.S. could be fighting ISIS while operating far from their enclave, but U.S. officials have answered the riddle. While ISIS may not be in the northeast Syrian region that the U.S. occupies, a far more important U.S. target is located there, Syria's oil and wheat. As now senior Biden and Pentagon official Dana Struhl explained in 2019, occupying the resource-rich region of Syria's northeast, which contains the country's hydrocarbons and its agricultural powerhouse, gives the U.S. government broader leverage to influence a political outcome in Syria, that's a quote, in line with U.S. dictates.
Well, there you go. That's an honest person.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder why that wasn't spread all over the mighty Wurlitzer.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Well, don't you remember at one point after Trump was forced to back down from his plans to pull U.S. troops out of Syria, he then made the acknowledgement that, well, yeah.
We're there to take their oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, two honest people. And all they say about Trump with that is, look at him, he's a looter. Wait a minute, you've been looting since 2014, you're still looting, he's not there anymore. And here you have this person explaining that you're not just looting the oil, you're looting the wheat, and you're doing it on purpose to starve the people of Syria so they'll overthrow their government. How is that not outlaw behavior? How is that not absolutely against international law? Well, it is. That's why they call it the rules-based order.
Yeah,
instead
yeah,
of international law, because they know they're criminals. They're crooks and criminals, and they steal, they kill, and they loot.
Yeah, and then they lie.
And then they lie.
Jennifer Caffarella of the Institute for the Study of War, a neoconservative Washington think tank, has likewise explained that the U.S. military occupation gives it, quote, direct influence over the vast majority of Syria's most productive oil fields, thereby controlling Syrian national treasures that, when added up, amount to brute geopolitical power for the U.S., unquote.
Henry Kissinger said something about control the oil and you control industry, control the food, and you control the people.
Right.
That's what they're going for. They're stealing their oil and their food.
Yeah, that's right. The brute geopolitical power derived from stealing Syrian resources is especially gratifying for the bipartisan U.S. foreign policy establishment, which can never forgive Syria and its allies in Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia for successfully resisting the CIA-led dirty war and the United States' de facto allies in al-Qaeda and ISIS, and he's got a link to that, that aim to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. To help enforce its regional plunder, the U.S. also maintains a military occupation in Iraq, sometimes in open defiance of the government's wishes. And that's true. I think the Iraqi parliament has twice voted that they don't want the United States' presence there.
Yeah, I talked about that on my show. The first time they voted to say get out, or at least one of the times they voted against, was 4 years ago after the U.S. blew up General Soleimani, who was there in a peace mission, on Iraqi soil.
Yeah.
And the United States blew him up, and ahead of the Iraqi militia, at a civilian airport.
Yeah.
When he came on a civilian flight. So the Iraqi parliament voted for the United States troops to leave. And the head of the United States troops at that time was a Marine lieutenant general. And when they voted, he wrote a thing saying, well, in deference to the national sovereignty of Iraq and democracy, we will prepare to leave. I hope that guy's all right. I hope he didn't get suicided or something. Because, of course, they just squealed. It was a big deal. They're like, no, we're not going to leave. We're not going to leave. We don't care about national sovereignty or democracy. We're staying there. And see, they still are. And then this year again, they voted in January for the United States to leave. And this time there was no honest general commanding the forces.
Right,
and they
yeah.
just said, no, we're staying.
Yeah, yeah.
Because national sovereignty and democracy.
Well, Mate does write about that. He said,
Iraq's
parliament called for a full U.S. withdrawal in January 2020, the Trump administration, really Mike Pompeo in that instance, responded by threatening to steal Iraq's U.S.-based foreign reserves. He's got a link there. Yet another example of the United States' expansive use of its broader leverage.
That isn't all they did, though.
Right.
They did a whole
lot
more.
So we keep hearing about we're the ones that want to protect national sovereignty and democracy. And yet when the Iraqi government democratically votes to say, hey, U.S., you need to leave, they turn around and put the thumb screws on them.
Yeah.
The Biden White House is equally aware that its commitment to Israeli attacks and U.S. military occupation endangers the American forces tasked with acting as enforcers. 1 week ago, the New York Times chief White House correspondent, that's Baker, reported that when it comes to deadly attacks on U.S. troops stationed in the Middle East, President Biden and his advisors worry that it's only a matter of time. Meanwhile, whenever news of an attack on U.S. forces comes in, officials wonder whether this will be the one that results in a broader regional war. Biden administration officials claim that they do not want to go so far that the conflict would escalate into a full-fledged war, particularly by striking Iran directly. Yet privately, they say they may have no choice, however, if American troops are killed. At that point, that red line had not been crossed, but 1 week later, it was. Veteran U.S. diplomat Aaron David Miller, who participated in the so-called peace process between Israelis and Palestinians, claimed that Biden confronts a problem without a risk-free solution. If U.S. forces are killed, they'll have no alternative but to respond directly against Iranian assets. In fact, Mate concludes, Biden has an alternative to knowingly sacrificing U.S. soldiers' lives and risking a broader regional war. That would be to withdraw U.S. forces from Iraq and Syria, stop supporting Israel's attacks on Gaza. The only risk in such a scenario would be to the goals of supremacists in both Israel and the United States, who insist that everyone is expendable, including their own soldiers, in defense of brute geopolitical power. All right, again, you can find this article by Aaron Mate at aaronmate.net. But that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.